Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Hour number two on this TD Thursday. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly. Broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. It is 10 a.m. on a Thursday, which means it is your time to talk to TD. You can text or call our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Get any questions you have for Teron in now. We've already got plenty on the text line. But get those in. We'll do these for the next 30 minutes. Let's start with Nevada Josh on the text line. Our weekly Xavier Restrepo segment here. TD, tell them Titans to catch the strep. Why are they acting like they're vaccinated? Do you think Xavier Restrepo could end up being activated at some point soon?
Here's the thing. Proche is running out of activations, right? So there's a possibility. I think the main thing is him not playing special teams. However, John Fossil did kind of hint at him getting involved there. But he said he's always going to lean towards the veteran, the guy who's already been there and done that. Calvin Ridley coming back, I don't know that that would really allow for Restrepo. So that's my long way of saying not likely.
Yeah.
It just kind of is what it is. I'll tell you one thing, though. He's wearing 13 this week to kind of simulate Christian Kirk and continue to do that. Like, that's his contribution. And he that's what he said. He's just going to go out, and his game days are every day.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
I think he's going to get a chance at some point this season, but especially with Ridley possibly coming back, and if you give me the choice of whether I want to see more Chim Dike or get to see Xavier Restrepo a little bit, I want more Chim Dike. I mean, that's a dude who has legit NFL speed. He's proven that he can be a playmaker on both offense and special teams. I would rather not have somebody looking over his shoulder and Xavier Restrepo. Let Chim Dike roll it out there and continue to play. Ben on the text line says, based off what they have seen, most people have less confidence that Cam will be a franchise quarterback now than they did when he was drafted. What are your thoughts on that, TD?
I mean, look, you know what it is, right? We live in a society where everything is quick.
Yeah.
Patience is a virtue, but it's not really existent in this society. So naturally, if you're not seeing this immediately, you're going to say, hey, Patriots fans were saying similar things last year about Drake May, and this dude's about to set the record for completion percentage.
Yeah. There was
he got the Patriots rolling.
There was a cut-up that got put out there by might have been Titans Film Room on Twitter, somebody out there of, hey, here are all of Drake May's turnovers from his rookie year, and there are some awful ones in there. And that's not to say that Drake May didn't have flashes as a rookie. Mm-hmm. He did, but he also didn't win many football games, and he turned the ball over too much. They got him a better coach. Josh McDaniels is coming in, and he has at least elevated his game. And look at Drake May now. He may not be the MVP, but he's in the conversation.
Yeah, and my thing is this. You know, you look, there are people who like are the complete and total opposite of patience, but they'll tell you, hey, Sam Darnold is a guy that you should sign. You know what Sam Darnold was in the beginning of his career?
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? So it's just like to form this opinion, and even though I didn't care for Sam Darnold whatsoever, I never called him a bust. I just was like, I just wonder how he'll be in the right situation. And he's in the right situation. It's like, okay, well, he's clearly not a bust. He's a good player, but he's not someone I would want leading my team because he withers in the clutch.
Right. The word bust is thrown around way too fast. And there, to be a bust, that's when you get moved on by, like, the team moves on from you. Josh Rosen is a bust. Like, I think that's a fair statement to say that he was a bust. But, like, Baker Mayfield, even when the Browns gave up on him, I still wouldn't have called him a bust. He got them to the playoffs. Like, there's a difference between a bust and a disappointment. And as of right now, you're looking at Cam Ward and saying, yeah, it's been disappointing based on what you expected from the number one overall pick at quarterback. But you can't be a bust 9 games into your career.
No, you can't, man.
Kind of in the same vein here, 0943 asks, what have you seen that is making Dart more successful than Cam Ward so far?
Has he really been more successful?
Statistically.
Okay. You know, stats, as Booger McFarland would say, are like bikinis. They show a lot, but not everything, right? So here's the deal. I think when you look at that, he's in a better offense, without a doubt, as far as, like, there's actually a scheme to it. And you got the coach playing to his strengths. Like, he is a mobile. He's a running quarterback.
Yeah.
So they're using that to his strengths. To his credit, though, Malik Nabers is out of there, and he's still making it happen.
He is. Know,
I am not going to, like, take anything. Jackson Dart is playing. He's shown promise.
Yeah.
So is Cam Ward. Right? And so just because Jackson Dart has shown promise, it doesn't mean Cam Ward can't. I think really it boils down to just being in a better situation where a guy had already developed a quarterback and he was on his way to developing him to an extent, but like you can't use him as a crash test.
No. Yeah, and if you look at the stats, it does look like that Jackson Dart is blowing Cam Ward out of the water with the amount of touchdowns that he's had. But you look at I remember seeing a touchdown a couple weeks ago that he threw that hit a defender in the head and bounced to Theo Johnson, who ran it in for a touchdown. Like, not all touchdowns are created equal.
Yeah.
And he's had some bad interceptions. That Broncos game, I mean, he lobbed one right to is it Justin Strnad, the linebacker? Threw it right in between the 4 and the 0 in his chest and ended up costing them the game.
Yeah.
So, like, that's two random examples, but just saying, like, Jackson Dart, yes, if you're box score watching, it looks like Dart has been head and shoulders above Cam Ward.
Yeah.
But you got to actually watch the games and see that Jackson Dart, yes, there's promise there, probably more promise than you'd expect from the 25th overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
But is he a guaranteed franchise quarterback? No.
And here's another thing about stats. All right. Who would you say is the best rapper of all time?
I'm not the person to be asking this.
Okay. But generally, people say Lil Wayne, Tupac, okay. Biggie, Jay-Z, Nas.
I probably would have gone Jay-Z.
Okay.
There you go.
You know who sold the most records ever? Hip-hop-wise? MC Hammer.
Wow.
You're not going to say he's the best. So, like, statistically, he's the best. But if you take and listen to the music, you're like, whoa, this doesn't belong on the same
That's
shelf.
That's a good point.
As Reasonable Doubt, Illmatic, Ready to Die, et cetera. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think when you look at stats, you have to place context on it.
No, that's a very good point. And for Cam Ward, there can be some nuance here. It's not black and white of he's either the future franchise quarterback or he's a bust. It's in the middle. Right now, he's been disappointing, but he has the opportunity to develop into a future franchise quarterback. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Your chance to talk to Teron. Davenport, let's go to our phone lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Teddy is on the line. Teddy, thanks for calling. What you got for TD?
Hey, guys. What's going on? Good morning. How are y'all doing?
What's going
doing
on?
Doing great.
Good, good, great, great. All right, man. First thing I want to say is I'm about tired of everybody and everybody not wanting to have patience for this process that's happening. And I truly feel like if we had Peyton Manning, guys would even be upset if you look at his rookie year. You know, everything is all about patience and development. And it seems like due to what Jaden Daniels and CJ Stroud did a couple of years ago, it's making everybody feel like, well, if you're drafted that high, this is what you're supposed to do. But if you look at what Jaden Daniels did, like when he went his rookie year, certain veteran quarterbacks don't even get there to their fifth or their fifth year, you know? So if you reach that success that early, it's hard to get back over there. And if you look at it, even from, was it Prescott, his rookie year, like how far he went and then what have the Cowboys been doing now? Not a lot. So everybody just need to have patience and watch this team grow slowly but surely. Because even if you say Cam has been bad, has everybody else been good? Nah, he's a rookie. And you're putting all the blame on a rookie who is supposed to come in. Everybody's supposed to help him, and you're putting the blame on him. Yeah, I'm about tired of it. So that was that. And the second part of this thing, the two is the second half of the season, I'm ready to see him take a step. You know, let him see things like exactly like how we are playing the Texans this Sunday. He's seen that Texans defense before. So hopefully he can learn a thing or two, improve on a thing or two, you know, and just keep going on that, building that, and, you know, finish this season strong. Because if he finishes the season strong, that's a good thing for us. Yeah, they're team tanking, but if I had it my way, I would want the Young Bucks to get some wings under his belt and get that feeling, and, you know, hopefully we can build on from that, man. Great calling in, guys. I hope you guys have a wonderful one.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Teddy. Yeah. It's
always good calls from Teddy.
Right, that's, I mean, it's a very reasonable way to look at it. Mm-hmm. Of, yeah, he struggled, but you got to have patience. best quarterbacks aren't made in a microwave. And it's funny. New York Doug makes me laugh every time he texts in. He's the one who says I have a pie in the face bet with him on who ends up being the better quarterback between Dart and Ward.
Okay.
He says that we are the equivalent with Cam Ward as Tom Cruise and John Travolta are with L. Ron Hubbard in Scientology. New York Doug, I respect the commitment here to the bit, but like again, you cannot develop a reasonable comparison of two rookie quarterbacks in less than 10 starts for both of them.
It's just not. They both have shown flashes. I'll say that, but I'm not ready to say. Look, I feel Cam Ward is a better prospect, a better player than Jackson Dart.
I think,
but situation it matters so much.
Cam Ward has a higher ceiling, and you draft quarterbacks based on their ceiling because you don't draft a guy number one overall hoping that he turns into Kirk Cousins. Like. Yeah, Kirk Cousins has been a consistently solid quarterback in the NFL. But you don't draft a quarterback first overall saying, man, I hope that this guy is a 10-year starter for us who gets us to the playoffs every once in a while but never further than the divisional round.
You're looking for a guy who can
win you a Super Bowl.
Exactly.
And I think Cam Ward has the ceiling to be an elite quarterback. Will he reach that ceiling? That's what we have to find out.
Yeah.
And right now he has not shown that he – is close to that ceiling, but he's a rookie. He's got a long way to go. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Again, your chance to talk to TD. Continue to get your questions in on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We got a couple of other good ones here on the text line. We have a couple people upset that you didn't mention Eminem as one of the best rappers of all time.
Because he's not.
It was Ben and Dustin from Hopkinsville both mentioned Eminem. So.
Yeah, because he's not.
We'll see what they have to say about that. Again, get your questions in. We'll
don't
get back
me,
to
don't
more.
Don't get me wrong, though. I'm an Eminem fan.
But
I like Eminem.
He's not. You wouldn't put him in that top tier?
No. And like I love Stan. Like Stan, that's I'll run that back 3-4 times. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, but it's just he's just not.
I love it. We got off on a little tangent there. Continue to get your questions in, and they don't have to be football related. They can
be
anything. Get them in for TD. We'll get to more of them coming up next. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. That's well done, Parker. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport,
well
Parker
done.
Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. TD, disrespecting Eminem in the last segment.
No, not that. I mean, to not mention someone as one of the GOATs, I don't think that's disrespect.
Said he wasn't in the conversation for best rapper of all time. That's gotten lots of interaction. Tommy says Lil Wayne is the best rapper of all time. Eminem is the best lyricist of all time.
Man, listen. Go ahead, whoever said that, Google Big L. That's the best lyricist of all time. All
right.
He unfortunately got shot and killed, so he never reached his potential. But you ask any like true hip hop head, especially New York, Philly, Jersey, that corridor, they're gonna tell you, man, Big L was untouchable.
All right. All right. I'm learning so much in this talk to TD.
This is what we do.
Justin from Greenbrier says, TD hating on the hammer. He's too legit to quit, man. It's hammer time and you
hey,
can't touch this.
I ain't gonna lie. I was on the too legit to quit. Yeah, I was on that, man. Dion, yo, that Falcons team, the old Falcons team.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Dirty Birds.
Yeah, with Andre Rison, all them. Yeah, no doubt.
615-737-1025. Your chance to talk to TD. Let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam
here
from Portland is called in. Adam, thanks for calling. What you got?
Eminem's one of the top three. Like, you can just relax there, TD.
In your opinion, but I've listened to hip-hop since it started, and yeah, he's not.
Yeah, I got you. Well, I used to love Lil Troy a lot more than anybody else, too. So, like, he's way too high on my list. I think people are just whatever you like, man. What gets you going?
My man.
You know? So,
that's right.
Anyway, I don't care what they're pumping into these locker rooms. I need them to pump something in the Titans locker room that's going to fire this team up. And that's why I called you today, man, because I want to see – we got, like, a year and a half before we actually go into our cool stadium. And I was going to ask you, if there's something you could do, if you own the team and you're like, I've got to fix this. I've got to pump some life back into the fan base. Is there something that you could think that we could do right now to fix it?
Something to pump life back into the fan base. I mean, obviously that's not, you know, the answer you're looking
for. Some of the fan base doesn't want this team to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about next year.
Yeah.
I think just play exciting football. That's really what it boils down to. Like, give fans a reason to cheer. Because even though this team is losing, like, there have been times when I've felt the crowd, what's left of it, cheering when there's a good moment. But you got to just have those more consistently. What do you think of that, Adam?
I think Adam dropped.
Adam dropped.
But I think the one thing that you could do outside of actually winning on the football field, which of course is what energizes any fan base, is if you make a big splash with whoever you hire as your head coach, right? Like, get somebody who excites the fan base. You know, I don't know if big splash always means big results, right? Mm-hmm. Just because it's a flashy name doesn't mean that he's actually going to have success. But if you did go out and get, it's never going to happen, but like John Gruden or something, I think that would excite some of the fan base. The draft day quote, people pay to get wet. You want the splash, but I don't know if the splash actually would end up leading to a good head coach. Kyle in Shelbyville on the text line says, TD, if we trade out of the number one pick and keep a top 10 pick in this year's draft, he says, would you pick Keldrick Falk from Auburn or Jordan Tyson from Arizona State? I don't know if Falk would be at the top of my list for edge rushers.
Give me Arvell Reese.
Right. Arvell Reese has been the...
Like, we don't even have to talk about it.
He has been the guy who's rising up draft boards the fastest. And he might be the number one overall player in this class.
That kind of juice that he brings, that's the type of stuff that Adam in Portland would be excited about.
Right.
Because, you know, as a fan, I know because I did it. I remember back in the day they drafted A.J. Jenkins out of Illinois, and I tried to talk myself into it. Didn't work. But still, when your team gets a player that does some exciting things, you're watching. You're like, ooh. Yeah, and you get energized by that. So I think, you know, that would be something else.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there are things in the draft that you could do to energize the fan base. I know everybody pretty much wants a trade back at this point where you end up with the number one overall pick. You can deal that into a couple of firsts, a second, a third, and start to rebuild this roster from the top with a lot of top 100 draft picks. Getting tons of interaction about the rap discussion. I did not think we were going to go here of who the greatest rapper of all time is. 2133 says Nas was definitely a better lyricist than Big L.
Nas is up there. I'm not going to – hey, listen, Nas is up there. But since we're mentioning names, like, you might as well put Jadakiss in there too, because Jada was a lyrical – like, Jada will paint a picture for you. 213, look, you're not going to get much argument from me about Nas, but, man – just look up Big L freestyle to Jay-Z beat, and you're going to be like, oh my. He ate Jay-Z up in his own cipher. Big L is that dude, man. Was that dude. Rest in peace, man.
Josh from Donaldson says, TD, homie, Big L was no better than Tupac. I'd call him even. Marshall got both of them, though.
Next question or statement. you're not gonna come on here and keep it moving.
I have an underrated one. What about NF? NF's lyrics are very good.
I remember one of his songs from Madden back in the day.
I'm not saying he's the best, but he's got to be very underrated.
There's a lot of guys that are underrated, man. There's a lot of guys. I want to see what Jeremiah thinks, actually.
Yeah, let's go to Jeremiah on the phone line. Who do you have as the best rapper of all time, Jeremiah?
Dolemite. That's old school. In fact, Snoop Dogg said Dolemite is who inspired him to be the success he was.
Thank you for the call, Jeremiah. We're getting all the names in here.
Yes, sir. And I'll tell you what'll help the Titans real quick.
Help me.
Go ahead.
Man, they need to impeach the woman that owns the team.
Well, damn.
I don't know if you can impeach the owner. But
I think you can do that to presidents, but not NFL owners.
Jeremiah out here wilding.
There's no impeachment process.
Y'all have a good one, man.
Thanks, Jeremiah.
Appreciate you, man. He wilded in the morning, man. That's crazy.
Impeach.
Hey, listen, we're talking about, like, we got to go back, too, since we're talking about rappers. Rakim, KRS-One. Big Daddy Kane, those are also, you know, from the 80s. Rock, man, listen, yeah.
We have found some great conversation. I mean, the text line is blowing up. 2133 says, TD, do you like Kevin Gates?
Hey, 213 is all right with me. Kevin, that's my dog. That's one of the newer, I call him newer, guys I like. Kevin Gates, Yeah, there's some different ones that I like. Yeah, Gates is he was actually my most played artist in 2023.
We got Wes from Hermitage saying, TD, let me flex for a minute. Some of my music got the attention of Jadakiss and the attention of Tech N9ne. I really thought me and Tech were going to drop a song, and we still might in the future. Stay tuned. So yeah.
All right, man. Stay tuned. Hey, DM me some of your tracks, man. Let me see what it's hitting for.
I don't know if Wes from Hermitage is your stage name, but let us know what you go by. We'll have to take a listen.
Hey, that could work.
Maybe we'll
Wes from Hermitage.
Wes from Hermitage. 2459 says Eric B. and Rakim and Andre 3000.
Rakim. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I apologize.
Forgot about Andre 3000. That's a really good one. Great mention. And Rakim, that's what I just mentioned.
Right.
Is one of the best ever. Rakim, yeah, for sure. I love this, man. I love it. I love music. Music is so much of a part. Wait till I tell my older brother. I'm like, big bro, you would not believe what we talked about for a whole segment.
Right. We have completely gone away from football here.
Here's the promise I make to the Nashville community. No show in this town will have better music than this one.
That's the promise I make. That is true. Let's go back to our phone line. We can get back into some football
because right,
Steve
get
is called
track,
in. Yeah, Steve, get us back on the rails here. What you got?
Hey, man, appreciate you taking my call. I was going to make a comment. A guy called in a while ago about, you know, how to get some life back into the fan base. And, you know, I've been a Titans fan since they came here. And what I've noticed the most is just an overall winning culture. We've lost that in the locker room. We've lost it in our coaches. It comes from the organization from top down. And I think we're going to have to get the right coach in here that's going to instill that back into us. The players have just kind of lost all, for the most part, what I can tell, lost all kind of sense of a winning culture. You see it with big programs like Baltimore, just teams that where you still feel like the culture is still there, and we've lost that from the 90s, you know, and the 2000s. There was something holding that there. I think Floyd Reese was a big part of that. I think having Jeff Fisher in there, just a lot of your guys that instilled that and kept that together, they were the glue. And we've just been missing that. I feel like Vrabel could have been that, but they butted heads up there, and we've got to get the right people. That's just my comment.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Steve. I think that it's exactly what Mike Borgonzi said, is that they need to get somebody who's going to build a culture here, who's going to come and be a leader. I think the difference this time is, because you had that in Vrabel. Vrabel was a leader. Mm-hmm. He was able to get the most out of his team. But Steve's right that he couldn't work with other people very well.
Yeah.
I know we hate the word around here, but collaboration, it wasn't there. You need to find that happy medium of, yes, a guy who's going to come in and he's going to be an alpha dog and he's going to come in and lead this locker room, but also is willing to work with Mike Borgonzi for whatever is the best thing for this Titans team.
And in addition to that, you know, you need to have the players who pass on the tradition, right? And the tradition has to be clear and obvious. Like, you look at the Ravens, right? You had Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, right? And then they passed it down. You know, Terrell Suggs, Haloti Ngata carried it forward to C.J. Mosley. And then, you know, John Harbaugh just kind of, like, encompassed it. And you had other players. Man, I can't think of off the top of my head who to point to that continue to carry on. But the point is, you got a guy – that you could point to now and say, hey, look, like, that's the epitome of being a Titan, and that's Jeffrey Simmons.
Yep.
But you need more, right? And you got to continue to pass that down. But first and foremost, you need to establish, like, what is it to be a Titan?
Yeah.
Like, you say play like a Raven, you know, it's you know, hard nose.
Right.
I don't know if I can say it to the wall, you know, that. And then also, like, you know, just a strong defensive team. Rugged football where you won't come away, you know you were in a fight. And that's the kind of, like, what is the identity for this team?
Great stuff from everybody on the text and phone lines for Talk to TD today. We got off the rails, we got back on the rails, everybody had some great thoughts, whether it was about football or about hip-hop or whatever it is. So appreciate all the interaction. We couldn't get to all of the questions out there. We will try and get to some of them later on in the show if we can. But coming up next, Andrew Allegretta from Vanderbilt Football going to join us. Vandy with an overtime win over Auburn on Saturday. They head into the bye week this week. We'll talk to Andrew coming up next. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly with you on this Thursday. And it's now time to go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, as we are joined by Andrew Allegretta, the voice of Vanderbilt football, for his weekly visit to the program. Vanderbilt now 8-2, the 14th ranked team in the country. Andrew, thanks for taking some time. Hope you're enjoying the start to your weekend off, and congratulations on another win last week.
Congratulations to the women's basketball team on a nice win last night, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, 3-0, and get a weekend off as well before going up to Western Kentucky next Wednesday. Andrew, that game against Auburn, even Clark Lee said it in his post-game press conference that that is not the way that he expected that game to go. It's an Auburn offense that had struggled, but under a new head coach, a new offensive play caller, they were able to unlock something. Vanderbilt had to come back in that game, and it may not have been pretty, but it is important for Vanderbilt to learn how to win those games late, because that's what you're going to have to do if you're going to find your way into the playoffs.
And there's also probably another element there too, Jake, which Norm touched on at the end of the broadcast. I'm sure he touched on it with you in the post game. It's like they know for sure now, in the past 2 weeks with Texas and with Auburn, they can just give Diego Pavia the football and say, win us a football game. The conventional wisdom for the better part of the season was it's a ball control offense. You're going to have to convert on third downs. It has to be third down and three. The rushing yards have to be good. You know, if you get outside of that lane, it's going to be tricky for Vanderbilt. Well, versus Texas, versus Auburn, they got outside of that lane, and they put up 30-some-odd points versus a very good Texas defense and 45 points versus an Auburn defense, which you can look at the records all you want. That's an elite unit in Auburn's defense, and they just dropped 45.
Yeah, the offense has been fantastic the last couple of weeks. The defense, on the other hand, do you have any concerns about that group? It was a Texas offense that had struggled to find much consistency, and they put up 34. Auburn had just put up 3 against Kentucky. They put up 38 against Vanderbilt. Do you think it was more, hey, we just need to get into this bye week and reset, kind of running out of gas, or do you think there are any legitimate concerns as we head to the final two games of the regular season?
Well, there's probably some validity to just kind of the fatigue and wear and tear of the season. Clark has talked about that to the team. He's talked about it in the press conference about kind of the fog and the haze and the intensity that a season can create, right? Like they talked about back in January, defining what they wanted their season to be, and that's one of those things that's easy to do in January. But then you get into the heart of the schedule, and you actually have to do those things in the moments. That separates championship teams from teams that go 500, but there's still a fatigue factor there. So I'm sure that's part of it. Now, the other part of it is, I've always heard the phrase that styles make the fights. I think there's probably a button that Auburn can push and a button that Texas can push with their perimeter skill set, which is something that Vanderbilt is going to have to continue to address throughout the course of the season. It's still an SEC team, so we'll see what happens in that game. But Tennessee certainly has the athletes on the perimeter to give Vanderbilt some problems. One of the things that Vanderbilt has been able to do to sort of mitigate potentially the fact that a Cam Coleman or a Wingo or whoever it happens to be on the outside can expose you was getting a lot of pressure. That pressure has dug a little bit the defensive line. So we'll see if they can get back to that. It's dovetailed a little bit through their blitz packages. I think one of the things that Steve Gregory would tell you is a level of wanting them to be in third down and eights and third down and nines a little bit more so they can get to their exotic blitz pressures. They haven't been able to do that quite as much because Texas and Auburn kind of stayed ahead of the chains with some of their athleticism on the perimeter. So I don't know if I'm raising some sort of gigantic red flag. I think there's some things in the matchup that Auburn and Texas can do that perhaps a Missouri couldn't do, perhaps an LSU couldn't do, perhaps a South Carolina couldn't do, and then just the wear and tear of the season. There's probably both of those things colliding.
Now, Andrew, as you look at the big picture of this and the rankings sit here and they fall into place, do you think Vanderbilt is kind of falling victim to, I don't want to say a bias, but like a – hey, it's not as big of a product. When you look at them being behind other two-loss teams despite their strength of schedule?
I don't know. That's a question for the guys inside the committee room. I think what was interesting today, and I've got to delve more into it, I just saw maybe like a half an hour before jumping on with you guys that Mac Rhodes, who chaired the committee, is stepping aside for some personal reasons, the Baylor athletic director. I know we all kind of felt a little bit squishy about his explanation with Utah and Notre Dame ahead of Vanderbilt. I was listening to the previous segment, too, where you talked about stats. Stats get messy, guys, because, you know, you referenced the Booger McFarland quote. There's a quote that is attributed to Vin Scully. I don't actually know if he said it about stats being like a lamppost for the intoxicated. You use it for support, not for elimination.
Oh, I like that one.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's actually Vin Scully or if that's just one of those things that you read on a quote that has Vin Scully's name at the bottom. I don't know. I am intrigued by how they have pieced that together. And I don't know. I sit back here, and I think we can have a little bit of heartburn about the placement of Vanderbilt with two football games left for the doors. I sit here hopeful and optimistic that if you take care of your business, the last image the committee is going to have is you going into a freakishly hostile Neyland Stadium against a good Tennessee team and getting a victory if that's how it's going to play out. Now, if Vanderbilt doesn't take care of its business, the conversation we have right now doesn't matter at all, TD. So I am optimistic that sitting at 10-2, coming off a win versus Tennessee, again, this is how it would have to play out, is a pretty loud statement. And I don't know if Utah can make that statement down the stretch. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens with Notre Dame versus Pittsburgh. I mean, that's probably a slightly underrated Pittsburgh team that has typically been, you know, plucky and feisty and pretty solid under Pat Narduzzi. We'll see what plays out. I think Andy Staples said something yesterday on one of their podcasts, like everybody expects chalk at this point in the season. Like, oh, of course the team that's ranked 13th or 14th will keep winning. What happens? It's not usually chalk. So let's see where it goes. I'm a little bit squishy on some of the current explanations, but the explanation is absent a 10-2 Vanderbilt team that would be coming off a win versus Tennessee if that's how it plays out.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, man. You didn't mention them, but I take a two-loss Vandy team over a one-loss BYU team. That's just me. But that being said, the reason why I would do that is because I feel like their schedule is vicious. So I want to ask you, just from you being around them and seeing them, how much do you think like this tough schedule has kind of weathered them to be successful down this stretch?
Yeah, good question. I think what's interesting about a lot of it is people are discounting the toughness of Vanderbilt's schedule. I was listening to the College Game Day podcast the other night, too, and there was kind of a shrug at Vanderbilt's schedule because how do we do the evaluations? Like, does Vanderbilt have three top 15 victories, which at the time the game was played, they sure were, South Carolina, Missouri, and LSU? Or does Vanderbilt have none because all of a sudden South Carolina struggles, LSU has gone through their problems. I still think Missouri's a pretty darn good team, but now they've got a backup quarterback. Like, how do you go through all of that? I certainly think that you are still talking about week in and week out facing the depth and the skill set of elite SEC athletes, which is really difficult. I think kind of to Jake's point at the start of this, the past month or so has proven to Vanderbilt that they can execute victories in lots of different ways. And it's helped teach them that they can push buttons that maybe they didn't expect to push at the start of the season. If they need to push the Diego Pavia hero button, they can, because they did versus a great Auburn team. If they need to go 3-3 at halftime versus Missouri and win a slugfest, they can. I don't know, guys. I mean, there's been a lot of different variety to the games of Vanderbilt football. So I think if anything, the season has shown them that they've got the toughness, they've got the resiliency, and they've got the flexibility to be effective in a lot of different games.
Andrew, last one for you here. Diego Pavia right in the mix for the Heisman Trophy. And 2 weeks ago, the counter to his campaign was, oh, he doesn't match up statistically with some of the other candidates. Well, that's not the case after the last 2 weeks. I would argue that nobody in the race pushes their team forward more than Diego Pavia. Just how impactful has he been the last few weeks when, right, your defense struggles, you have to put the ball in his hands, and he's been able to execute pretty much every single time?
Well, that's a lovely tee that you just put that ball on for me, Dick. That's
there you go.
Kind.
You're welcome.
Delightful for you. Look, again, there's a lot of really good contenders for the Heisman. It's an interesting season in which there is not this far and away crazy statistical season from a Joe Burrow or whatever that sort of trumps any other argument. Statistically, and it's 2 weeks, right? I'm not arguing that 2 weeks defines a Heisman campaign. But the past 2 weeks, Diego Pavia has more statistical production than any other contender or legitimate contender in the Heisman race. That's more than Sagan, pass yards, rush yards, touchdowns. It's more than Mendoza, pass yards, rushing yards, touchdowns. It's more than Reed, passing yards. Reed and Pavia the past 2 games have the exact same number of rushing yards, and Pavia has got more touchdowns. Welcome to the land of subjectivity, where you get to define what means what the word best player in college football means, quote-unquote best. So have fun with that, because everyone's going to slice that apple differently. But I know all of us that live here in Nashville has watched Diego Pavia elevate a program with Clark Lee, with Tim Beck, with Jerry Kill, literally infect the entire locker room with confidence, which is what it needed, and then is able to put up statistics against guys not just good but great defenses in Texas and Auburn. I don't know if he's going to win, but the argument that I would continue to make is, like, goodness, he has got to be sitting in a seat in a tux in New York City in December. He has done everything in some fashion that you would want a great college football player to do to define best player in college football. And if Clark Lee is in the locker room telling the entire team after the Auburn game, the game ball goes to your Heisman Trophy front runner, Diego Pavia, I mean, that's, I get that he's biased and we're all biased, but that's a pretty loud statement. We'll see where the next 2 games go. The part of this that you've just got to be honest with is wins and losses matter. If those toes from Cooper end up out of bounds and Indiana loses its first game, I mean, we're not having the same conversation about Mendoza, but yeah. Now you get to tell this story about what a heroic comeback and, the hero leads his team to victory despite all of the odds because a toe from Cooper came down the right way. So Vanderbilt's got to win football games, and he's going to have continued elevated performances versus both Kentucky and Tennessee. And again, I tend to think that if they go down the stretch and play well versus Kentucky and Tennessee, he's got good games. And you get this kind of resounding image in your head of Vanderbilt going 10-2 with Pavia as a victor in Neyland Stadium, which is going to be brutally difficult. But if you've got that image to finish things off, I tend to think he sits in New York City somewhere in December.
100% agree. Andrew, as always, appreciate you coming on. Excited for the final couple games of the year, and hope you enjoy your weekend off.
Thank you. By the way, go Vanderbilt soccer.
Yes.
First round NCAA tournament at home on Friday. Best of luck to them. Number one seed.
Yes. Thank you for making that point. We had Darren Ambrose on earlier in the week. 7 o'clock kick against Tennessee Tech on Friday. So excited to see them try and make a run through the NCAA tournament. Thanks, Andrew. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Andrew Allegretta, voice of Vanderbilt football. Commodores off this weekend, 8-2 on the year. They turn their attention to Kentucky next weekend. We'll react to what Andrew had to say coming up next and wrap up hour number two. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.
The greatest hip-hop artist of all time, at least statistically, right? Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.
If you go by stats.
We have a... We have opened up a Pandora's box with the discussion of who the greatest rapper and greatest lyricist of all time is.
Yeah.
We've gotten so many texts about this. It was great having Andrew Allegretta on from Vanderbilt football. We didn't ask him his thoughts.
Yeah, I would have liked to gotten his...
I do know Andrew. I believe his favorite artist of all time is John Mayer.
Okay.
So he's a big John. Maybe he throws John Mayer's hat in there as greatest lyricist of all time.
Belvis Delfield on the chat. I forgot about Scarface. I went to see him right at Brooklyn Bowl.
Really?
Mine's Playing Tricks on Me, Murder Avenue. Yeah, Scarface. Yeah, he was Smile. Yeah.
Yeah, the names, I read them off to you about all of the different names that we've got. We couldn't get to all of them in that segment, but Method Man, Gangstar.
Gangstar, the Guru, that was my dad's favorite rapper.
Yeah.
You mentioned Method Man. Like, I should slap myself in the face for not mentioning Wu-Tang. Raekwon. Yo, Raekwon, in the 90s, Raekwon, the purple tape, only built for Cuban Links, a straight-up street anthem, man. Raekwon, Ghostface. Oh, man. We could go on and on.
We really could. I mean, I'm looking through. There's probably 15 other names that have been mentioned. But, you know, this is a sports show. We can only spend so much time.
Recalibrate.
We were talking to Andrew, and I thought you had a good question about the way that Vandy is being ranked.
Yeah. It's like they don't trust
other two-loss teams. And me and Corey Curtis got into it yesterday because I said that a 10-2 Vanderbilt has a better resume than a 10-2 Notre Dame. And he didn't agree with me. He thought that their wins were equal and that, you know, they lost on the last play of the game against Texas A&M. But I look at it as all of the losses between those two teams are in the top 15. There are no bad losses for either team. Mm-hmm. In fact, both of Vandy's losses are top 10 teams in the country right now. Vandy's wins stack up better than Notre Dame's wins. And the committee basically came out yesterday and I know Mac Rhodes just stepped down, so it was his explanation, but he said that they view Notre Dame as a complete team, basically saying that based on the eye test, we think Notre Dame is better than Vanderbilt. But if you're looking at what they've actually done on the field, Vanderbilt's wins are more impressive than Notre Dame's wins.
Yeah, I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head just when you mentioned the Alabama and Texas loss. So let's just look at that. You know, both of those teams are top 10. So for me, in addition to playing in a rugged SEC, I'm not, you know, biased towards the SEC, so to speak, but like you got to call a spade. That's a tough game. They just played an Auburn team that would probably beat, you know, some of these teams as you're mentioning.
Right.
You know, especially and caught them in that type of situation where you have, you know, a coach that was fired and they came in with their hats on fire and they did what they thought they had to do, but it just came up short.
No, I mean, and Auburn maybe isn't the example of, like, that's a marquee win for Vanderbilt, but LSU is still a really talented team.
Yeah.
They were a top 10 team in the country when Vanderbilt played them. Missouri still has only 3 losses this season. Mm-hmm. If you beat Tennessee at the end of the year, that's another win against a likely ranked team. Notre Dame's best wins this year, USC, which I would say is a better win than anything Vanderbilt has right now. They're currently top 20 in the country. But their second best win would be Arkansas or Boise State or NC State. It's like they Navy. Like, these teams aren't on the same level as the game-in, game-out opponents that Vandy plays in the SEC.
But see, that's my point, and that's why I mentioned the Auburn game. That's supposed to be a game. Oh, Vandy's going to win that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that's a prime win for them, but it's a good example of how tough this schedule actually is, right? Because, again, that's oh, they're going to win that game. That's what you say when you look at the schedule.
Right.
And look at how tough it was.
Yeah. No, it's the SEC is a meat grinder, and it's like you don't get a week off. I'm sorry, but Notre Dame playing Syracuse and Stanford down the stretch, like, that's not the same as playing Missouri and LSU and Texas. And I think and we're getting brand is what everybody's saying on the text line, brand bias. Justin from Greenbrier says it's the helmets, you know, the shiny gold helmets are distracting the college football playoff committee. It's just
blinded by the light, huh?
The committee has basically already made the precedent that a two-loss Notre Dame would get in over a two-loss Vanderbilt. So nothing's going to change there. But I do hope that, let's say, you mentioned it, BYU. If BYU wins out and loses in the Big 12 championship game and Utah wins out and goes 10-2, I really hope that they view Vanderbilt's win over Tennessee as enough to leapfrog them because BYU's best win is against Utah. Like, the Big 12 just does not have enough talent to view and say that going 11-1 in that league is more impressive than going 10-2 in the SEC.
Call it like it is, man.
Anyway, plenty to get to. More football to play, of course, around college football. So Vandy still has to take care of business. You got to go beat Kentucky. You got to go beat Tennessee. But I would hope at the end of the year Vanderbilt would be in with that record. And you've got some scoreboard watching to do this weekend, rooting against Notre Dame, rooting against Oklahoma, rooting against Texas this weekend. If those three teams lose, then there's really no I don't think there would be any kind of issue for Vanderbilt to get in at 10-2. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Back to the Titans after this. We're going to get into the defense a little bit. Quandre Diggs no longer on the team. Kevin Winston going to step into more of a big role. We'll talk about that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Teron Davenport, Parker Kelly, next man up. 1025 The Game.